Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files Weekend Special. We're going to be going over a couple things today. Biden threatens Americans with nukes, Microsoft crafting big tech legislation, HR 1 gets filibustered, parents stand up to critical race theory and transgender policies in schools, Americans beginning to favor socialism, a new poll from Axios states, and finally, I cover the U.S. government UFO report.
They're going to be getting checks in the mail that are consequential.
I wrote the bill on the environment. Pay them more.
This is an employees bargaining chip now. What's happening?
So Biden, he had his little presser. He gave his speech. He's been giving a couple of speeches, having a couple more questions this last week or so. Folks, I have a jam-packed show for you tonight. I'm pumped up. I have a lot of information. I'm going to go over some of this Biden stuff, this gun legislation, or just him really going out and giving a speech about everything. I mean, he was all over the place during the speech. He was talking about gun reform, and then he goes back to infrastructure. Apparently, they're coming out with some sort of infrastructure bill, a bipartisan agreement. Him, a picture of a couple others, all the people that are there, Rhino Republicans like Mitt Romney. So really, it's just a Democrat bill. But let's first get to some of this. That's just Joe Biden straight up being creepy. That's probably what he does to those little girls when he walks and whispers in their ear and like pulls their, like grabs their hair and smells it all oddly. He's probably whispering things like a freaking weirdo. And in this clip, I just don't know. I don't know how to handle it. It's just Joe Biden being creepy, being weird. He doesn't know where he's at. I'm going to show you three different clips from Biden talking about the Second Amendment specifically. There's a fourth one I cut out. The fourth one was he was saying talking about magazine size, 20, 30, 50, 100, 100 magazines. Just going talking about how that's too many rounds in a magazine. I think he was calling it clips. He wasn't calling it a magazine, which once again, that's incorrect. It's called a magazine, but whatever. So, first off, he goes after FFLs, Federal Firearms License Dealers. That's his very first clip. Play five.
The general said we're going to crack down on those gun dealers and the violent criminals they knowingly own. In April, I announced that the Justice Department is going to be issuing an annual report on gun trafficking so we can update that data. Today, the department is announcing, as I just did, a major crackdown on stem the flow of guns used to commit violent crimes. It's zero tolerance for gun dealers who willfully violate key existing laws and regulations. Let me repeat, zero tolerance. If you willfully sell a gun to someone who's prohibited from possessing it, if you willfully fail to run a background check, if you willfully falsify a record, if you willfully fail to cooperate with the tracing requests or inspections, my message to you is this: we'll find you, and we will seek your license to sell guns.
So what's really weird about Biden, even in this clip, if you notice, if you're listening, he pulls his air in from his mouth the entire time. You can hear him doing it. I think it's kind of weird. I just don't know. He's breathy. He's talking. Everything he's saying is, it sounds like this. He's very breathy. He sounds like he's going to pass out. But just to actually get into the substance here, this is already legislated. This is already law. If a firearms dealer deals to someone knowingly, making an illegal transaction knowingly, he's saying we're going to take away their license. Yes, Joe Biden, this was the law. What you're now gonna, so suddenly what, you weren't enforcing this before? I mean, it's just semantics, folks. It's him going out there and giving the speech to get the applause from his left-wing crowd. That's all this is. So next he goes on, talks about, and this is actually probably the worst one of all the clips. He talks about citizens and how them being armed, they will never be able to defend themselves against the government. Play clip six.
The Second Amendment, from the day it was passed, limited the type of people who could own a gun and what type of weapon you could own. You couldn't buy a cannon. Those who say the blood of patriots, you know, and all the stuff about how we're going to have to move against the government. Well, the Tree of Liberty is not watered with the blood of patriots. What's happened is that there have never been, if you wanted to think you need to have weapons to take on the government, you need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons. The point is that there's always been the ability to limit, rationally limit, the type of weapon that can be owned and who can own it.
So the quote that we're looking for here that Joe Biden was unable to remember was, it was a Thomas Jefferson quote. It was, "The Tree of Liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants." I'm pretty sure that's what the exact quote is. I'm not 100% sure. So Joe Biden not only forgets the tyrant part, he only says the blood of patriots. That's the first thing. I mean, the second thing is he's equating banning an AR-15 or banning a rifle, he's equating that with a cannon during the revolution, right after the Revolutionary War. I don't really know exactly what the legislation was banning people from owning cannons, if that's even true. I don't even necessarily know if that's at the inception of America. I doubt it, but I'm don't even know necessarily if that's true what he said. But it doesn't even matter, because if you want to talk about modern day, the modern day cannon is a tank. So he's not talking about Americans are talking about legal ownership of a rifle. They're talking about being able to defend their families with an AR-15. They're not talking about owning a tank right now. But he's equating what the old time cannon was, which is now considered a tank. He's equating a tank in modern day times to a rifle. He's saying having a rifle is similar to having a tank. And that's just not the case. If he said something like, "We restricted who can own muskets," if he said something like that, which they didn't restrict that in the same way at all, that constitutional, being able to own firearms at that time, I don't really know any restrictions. And you know, I read through these Federalist Papers. You guys know me, so some of you that listen to some of the Federalist Paper episodes, I'm pretty well versed in history. I don't really know of a time, as soon as they started the country, where they were telling people that they couldn't own firearms. I just don't know. I don't think anything that he's saying, anything that he's alluding to is rooted in reality or any truth. I think he's just going up there and making it up. So Biden, he threatens the citizens with nukes as well. He says, "Oh, well, you guys aren't going to be able to do anything if you don't have any nuclear weapons or F-15s. And here's really the case. In Afghanistan, how long have we been fighting in Afghanistan for? We've been fighting in Afghanistan for 20 years, okay? Our United States military has yet to be able to suppress the threat. I actually have another article later on this, how they sent assault drones over there to attack the Taliban in Afghanistan. So we're still fighting a war for about 20 years now at this point. And what are they armed with? The Taliban, what's Al-Qaeda armed with? We're fighting people that are using war tactics from the Afghan war. They're using 50-year-old AK-47s, and we cannot suppress them. And you're telling us we would need nuclear weapons or we would need F-15s to be able to fight against the government. That's just not true. It's not the case. The government, if anything, their strongest, their very strongest skill, I guess, or their strongest technique would be to defund our bank accounts. That's pretty much all they would be able to do to us. And that's why I buy Bitcoin. So just because then you are now financially independent from a third party that says they, you know, have some sort of a claim to all of your money that's sitting in the bank. They don't have anything at that point. So the government, there's really nothing they can do to suppress the American people. If the American people really wanted to do something, we could have this government on their knees. Because if they decide to nuke us, then guess what, folks? Who are they taxing to pay for the United States government? And guess what? Who is pushing the nuclear button and who's carrying out the nuclear mission? Because you're not only going to have one person carry it out. It's going to have to be multiple people. Who's going to do it? Who in our military is going to do that? Nobody is. It's just, he's full of it. Anyone that, if you ever get confronted with his argument from anybody, that's how you answer them. They go, oh, well, they'll probably defund your bank account. You go, oh, well, I'm investing in Bitcoin anyway, so it doesn't matter. Oh, well, you know, you don't have nuclear weapons, you don't have tanks, you don't have all these things. Oh, yeah, well, we have all that in Afghanistan, and we've yet to do anything about it. And we're talking about a population in Afghanistan that isn't trained the same, doesn't have the same type of rifles, not as reliable, doesn't have the same range. People just are not as skilled with firearms in Afghanistan. There's not as high of a population. There's also not as armed of a population either. In America, we have more guns than we do people. I mean, it's just asinine. It's a ridiculous argument to even try to make to a lawful gun owner that you can't do anything against the government because they're way stronger than you. You think the people in the military that fight for freedom are going to go, yeah, sure, Joe Biden, let's go bomb our own people? Do you think the military, you think we have people in the military? I think there's probably a few. There's probably a few communists. But you're trying to say a majority of our military, which is comprised of about 2.5 million people, this country is 330 million people strong. If you give us 3% of that population, then we overwhelm the military by more than three times. I mean, it's such a stupid argument to even have to debunk, honestly. So another one, next clip. He talks about big cities, and he really just opens the can of worms here. I'm going to explain afterwards. Play clip 7.
Disrupting illegal gun trafficking. Now, the gun lobby wants you to believe that cities that are the toughest gun, had the toughest gun laws, still have the highest rates of gun violence, as was pointed out by the group we had today in our roundtable. The violence is so, they argue, why do you need those gun laws if they don't work in cities that have tough laws? Don't believe it. Here's the truth. Today's conversation with Mayor Scott of Baltimore, for example, echoed what we know to be the case and hear from mayors all across the country. Mayors have the power to help shape and enforce the laws in their cities. But they can't control the laws in neighboring cities and states, even though the gun legally bought there is often ends up in their streets. Mayor Scott says that 80% of the guns in Baltimore were acquired outside the city.
So Joe Biden comes out. He talks about, oh, well, big cities, they're restrictive gun laws, but somehow they still get the guns inside the cities because they come from outside the cities. No shit, Joe Biden. They come from outside the cities because in those states, the laws aren't the same in every single municipality as they are in the city, the most restrictive gun laws. And really what the problem is all the people that live in the city, because they actually follow the laws, the good Samaritans, the good people, they can't have a firearm to defend themselves. And then all the criminals know, they go, oh, look, restricted gun laws over there. Let's go over there. I'll just rob everybody over there, and I won't have any issues because no one can defend themselves anyway. The state, the city doesn't allow them to. And usually, actually, the argument from the left is, well, all of these guns, they're not coming from in this state. They're coming from out of state. And then if you actually run back the numbers, that's not the truth. Usually, when illegal firearms are used to perpetrate a crime, pretty much in every big city, except for maybe Chicago, just because Chicago is so close to Michigan, they're usually done from in-state. It's usually bought the firearm from in-state in some sort of a legal facet, some sort of a legal way. Just all the gun legislation that they call for, it's already been done. There's nothing else they can do at this point. I mean, they could try to push more and more, but it's not going to restrict anything but the people that are law-abiding citizens and good gun owners. Concealed carry holders have a lower crime rate than police officers do, okay? And obviously much lower than the normal population, because police officers usually have a lower crime rate than the regular population. So we're talking about a subgroup, lawful concealed carry holders. They have a lower crime rate than cops. They probably have the lowest crime rate out there if you really crunch the numbers. And here what Joe Biden says, well, the gun lobby wants you to believe that the restrictive gun legislation in this city, the gun lobby isn't like a bunch of big manufacturers. It's not all this big corporate money. That's what the Democrats always want everything to be looked through the schism of, oh, look, the rich people are trying to screw us. They try to do this class warfare a lot of the time. They try to do, oh, well, the manufacturers, they're so rich, they make so much money. Meanwhile, a lot of them are claiming for bankruptcy because they don't have actually the supplies to be able to supply people with all the guns with the demand right now. You know, there is the gun lobby is the American people. That's what represents the. You want to talk about a gun lobby? It's a bunch of lawful American gun owners, small donors that give to the NRA or give to the guns, the Gun Owners of America, or any other Second Amendment civil liberties organization. That is what he likes to call the gun lobby. Everybody always makes it like it's this big boogeyman, like there's a bunch of manufacturers with a bunch of money trying to screw the people. That's just not the case. The case is people want to be responsible, and they want to be able to carry out the responsibility of defending and protecting their families. That's just the truth. And he will not address that, obviously. So this episode, folks, I've been reading about a lot of stuff. This has actually been, usually everyone messages me that knows me, they say, why is it that your show is so, it's so negative sometimes? It's not, I'm like, listen, man, I just respond to the news. The news sucks. This is how it goes, unfortunately. It seems like we're getting a lot of wins on the conservative side. We're getting a lot of pro-life legislation. In particular, right now, we're getting a lot of gun sanctuary legislation. So I have this article, a lot of gun rights, concealed carry, they're calling it constitutional carry, where you don't need any type of permit, you just have a constitutional carry. And then there's other states that are saying any unlawful gun legislation that gets passed federally, we don't care. We're not going to enforce it. Then there's counties that say by the state, if anything gets passed, we're also not going to enforce it, which is impressive. So we have these gun sanctuaries that are erupting right now. I have this Epic Times piece. It's written by Jack Phillips. So it states the website Sanctuary, and this is the name of the website, Sanctuary Counties, found on June 20th that there are now 1,930 counties that are protected by Second Amendment sanctuary legislation at either the state or county level, representing 61% of all counties. It noted that a number of states have passed constitutional carry laws, while specifically approximately 1,137 counties have taken it upon themselves to pass Second Amendment sanctuary legislation, and likely hundreds of cities, townships, boroughs, etc. have done so at their level as well. So we're seeing a big shift. And not really, I wouldn't even call it a shift. You notice this is what actually happens. You have a Republican as the president. Then there's these little small wins that are kind of going on for Democrats in these little separate counties or whatever. And really for them, it's not legislative wins. It's more like we're going to implement, you know, critical race theory. We're going to implement this. We're going to implement that. Transgender policies, which we're going to go over later in the show. And then you see a Democrat president gets in there. And then suddenly now all the Republican states, all the red states, all the conservative states are starting to man up, and they're starting to pass legislation to protect constitutional amendments in the Bill of Rights. So it goes on, this piece. In a statement to the Epic Times on Friday, a spokesperson for the Sanctuary Counties movement said that, and I quote, "A Second Amendment sanctuary refers to a state, county, city, or other municipality expressing their support for the Second Amendment and many cases vowing not to enforce new unconstitutional gun laws. Constitutional carry generally, meanwhile, refers to the ability of a state's citizens to carry a weapon without a permit," added the spokesperson, noting that in Texas, both constitutional carry and Second Amendment sanctuary bills were passed and signed. Yeah, so then it kind of goes through this piece. You got Nebraska, you got some stuff kind of going on, I think in Arkansas. There's all these different states that are trying to pass this constitutional carry, and then some states, some municipalities saying, we're just not going to enforce anything that we view as unconstitutional in terms of gun legislation, which is a good thing. This is a win right now for the conservatives. I think there's an overall win right and left. For the most part, I think there's a lot of liberals that actually agree with the Second Amendment, especially over this last year and a half, 2 years. Arm yourselves against the government is probably much more their perspective. So next I have this piece. It's Microsoft. This is something special here. Microsoft may have helped construct big tech antitrust legislation. So it's a Daily Caller piece. It's written by Thomas Catanacci. I have this quick video. Thomas Massey, he's a representative in the House of Reps, Republican. He received this document from a whistleblower at Microsoft. And it's a document of the legislation, but it's a document of the legislation before it was this final document that they're all currently now looking at to vote for. So Microsoft had the legislation before the legislators did. So whoever wrote up the bill gave it to Microsoft, said, what do you guys think about this? Any adjustments that we need to make? So we have the government working with big industry, working with big tech here, cozying up super hard, and they got caught in the act. I got a clip of him talking about this very briefly. Play clip 10.
Politically correct. So how is it that one of these billion-dollar tech companies, seemingly $2 trillion, is not covered by this bill? We're supposed to believe that we are here rewriting antitrust laws to protect the little guy from these dangerous big companies. And I just came into possession of a document that everybody needs to know about. It's marked confidential Microsoft. A whistleblower provided this. It's the first draft of one of these bills that would have covered Microsoft. This begs the question, did Microsoft have this bill and the other bills that we are voting on today before I had this bill? Why would you have to market confidential Microsoft if they found it on the website for Congress? Why would it have to be marked this way?
So it's pretty apparent now that Microsoft is doing some dealings with the Democrats that are involved in writing this bill. And I think the name was, let me see if I could find the specific name of the Democrat that wrote the bill. So this one actually kind of looks a little bipartisan in terms of what they're going to do about it, because this is a serious problem, obviously. And this should be, like, you should get in trouble for this, but obviously no one's going to be held to a standard because this is the government and they never are. So who wrote it? It was sponsored by Democratic Representative Hakeem Jeffries. So he's the one that was involved here. Let me just go through this, because it's actually a lot worse than what you think it is. Massey kind of alludes to it a little bit. But yes, now it shows that the original, the confidential document, has different provisions in it than the final document. And those provisions help to benefit Microsoft. So Microsoft was given an advanced copy of major antitrust legislation, a document given to Republican Representative Thomas Massey, as I said, which was given to him by a whistleblower. The document is the original version of the Platform Competition and Opportunity Act, which is the name of the bill, one of Democrats' six pending antitrust bills targeting big tech, according to Representative Thomas Massey. Every page of the document, which the Daily Caller News Foundation obtained on Wednesday, is watermarked with the text confidential Microsoft. So this is known. This is a confidential document that they knew they were giving to Microsoft. So, the original version of the Platform Competition and Opportunity Act that Microsoft apparently received notably included a much lower threshold for determining which big tech companies would be affected than the updated version the whistleblower document showed, whereas the latest version of the bill states that platforms with at least 50 million monthly active users would be subject to the antitrust regulations. The original version provided by the whistleblower set that number at 500,000. The monthly active users change exempts Microsoft services from being affected by the proposed regulations, Massey said during the hearing. He asked the other members of the committee if any other big tech organizations were also exempt from the regulations due to alterations. So let me just try to attempt to explain this here. What you have here is Microsoft. Originally, it was written that the original version was whistleblower set that a number of 500,000. Now it's 50 million. You're going to need at least 50 million active users. I don't exactly know. I think they did that because they didn't want to show that maybe they have some sort of smaller subsidiaries at Microsoft. This is me just speculating. Or they work with some other companies that have smaller amounts of active users, but they use it proprietary kind of on their programs, which would make them not have to qualify for this. But Microsoft still gets exempt. And that's the key, is Microsoft in this case is going to be exempt from this antitrust. And that's the reason why they did this. And then they actually lowered the number. They raised the number by a multiple of 10, really, to 50 million. I mean, the difference between 50 million and 500,000 is huge. So that just means that Microsoft must have some sort of subsidiaries, or they have these very small companies that work with them, and they kind of collaborate with those smaller companies, and they don't want those smaller companies to be damaged from this. So they raise the number to 50 million and they say, "Oh, well, we're exempt." And I'm going to explain why it is that they are exempt. It's a, and then this is straight from the confidential paperwork. However, a separate alteration to the original bill potentially exempts Windows from the regulations. The first version defined online platform as an operating system, while the latest version defined it as a mobile operating system. So everybody knows Microsoft's mostly, they're not known for their for their phone operating system, not the Linux, you know. I don't even know if there is really technically a Windows phone, now that I'm thinking about it. But I do know for sure that there's a bunch of Apple phones. So this would work harder to, you know, throw these regulations on Apple rather than Microsoft. And Microsoft now, most of their stuff is computer-based or it's tablet-based, and that's not considered a mobile operating system, and this would exempt them from the rules. This is just, you know, big tech colluding with government, and this is what's been going on this whole time, but this is just another classic example of it happening. Then I got another one. And this is why I think we're winning, folks. There's so many things that, like, we're pointing out them doing stupid stuff. And then we got HR 1 doesn't get passed. The Democrats cry like big babies about it. I got a Fox News piece. I got a couple of quotes from a bunch of Democrat hack job politicians. Senator Raphael Warnock, first off, he said, and if you guys don't remember what HR 1 is, it was pretty much a bill to federalize elections. You're not going to get federal money for the elections unless if you coincide with the federal rules. Therefore, everyone's pretty much going to coincide with the federal rules because they do not have the money to follow through with these elections. And this is actually a direct violation of the Constitution. You would need a constitutional amendment to overhaul the rules of voting and the procedures and the standards for that, because that's all supposed to be laid out by the legislature of the independent states. So the states have their own sovereignty in terms of regulating elections. That's not the federal government's job. So this piece of legislation is just unconstitutional on its face. If it even got passed through everything, and if they were able to abolish the filibuster, which they're going to talk about here, it wouldn't matter. It would get to the Supreme Court and it pretty much would be dead. In my opinion, if I was a Supreme Court justice, it would be shot down instantly because it's just unconstitutional. You guys are going to have to go through a constitutional amendment if you want to overhaul the Constitution like that. So Raphael Warnock, he stated, and I quote, "We've got to find a way to pass voting rights, and I'm deeply committed to that. No Senate rule is more important than the constitutional right to vote." End quote. So he's talking about, when he says the Senate rule, he's talking about the filibuster. So next you got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She states, and I quote, "Call me radical, but I do not believe a minority of senators should be able to block voting rights for millions of people." Yes, let me explain why you have the filibuster. You have the filibuster because we are a republic. We are not a democracy. A democracy rules by the mob. That's why a minority is able to shut down the majority. And it's not a huge minority. It's only a 60-40. It's not like it's a 70-30 or it's an 80-20. 60-40 probably goes to show, if you can't get 60 votes in the Senate, it probably isn't a good piece of legislation, simply. Less law is good, actually, in America. More law is bad. That's just the way it simply works. Because the government can't do anything right. So next, Ayanna Pressley states, and I quote, "The people did not give Democrats the House, Senate, and White House to compromise with insurrectionists. Abolish the filibuster so we can do the people's work," end quote. So I just love how, you know, you had 74 million people voted for Donald Trump. You actually had a gain in the House of Representatives. In the Senate, you have an equal vote, which is, in a republic, this is all fine in a republic, but they want a democracy. They want mob rule. Because a democracy, folks, it is mob rule. It's just the majority always wins. So what they want is, since they have the majority, they think that everybody in America automatically thinks, because they somehow hold the majority right now, that we want to abolish the filibuster, that we want to federalize elections, that we want a federal rifle ban, we want gun confiscation, we want redistributionist programs where they come to our house and they confiscate our money and then give it to other people. Like, we want all of these stupid programs. That's really what they're inferring, and that's fine. They can think all of that, but every single thing that I just stated, folks, every single one requires a constitutional amendment. It doesn't require mob rule, majority rule. It requires 2/3 of the House of Representatives and the Senate, and then 3/4 of all states to also agree in their legislative bodies, which they're not going to get. So everything that they're currently talking about right now, it's all stuff that they want to change fundamentally the Constitution. And they think that abolishing the filibuster will help them do that. It won't make a difference, because then they still have to go to every single individual state. The only chance that they have is that they hope the Supreme Court just doesn't enforce the Constitution if they go to abolish the filibuster and then they try to pass some of this authoritarian rules. It's just, it is really something else, man, with them. It's just such tyrants. Once you actually get into politics and once you start reading, if you try to even educate people, they don't even care. But once you actually, if you're really interested in the topic at hand and you start reading about it, you realize that, I mean, politicians in a general sense, not a fan of any of them. But you can at least state, you could say, okay, so you have Republicans in all these red states, you have Republicans now have constitutional carry regulations, and they say they're not going to enforce unconstitutional Second Amendment rules. And when I look at freedom, you want to talk about the ultimate freedom? The ultimate freedom is the First and Second Amendment. The idea of being able to preserve your life and your family's lives, as well as fight back against a tyrannical government, and you have the Republican Party, whether you like them or hate them, are defending that, period. They are, full stop. That's what they're doing. Democrat Party have they defended anything? Have they defended anything? Have you ever remembered a time in your life where you said, wow, Democrat Party really did their job to defend my civil liberties? I've never thought about that once. One time, one scenario, one case, one example where the Democrat Party has worked to help me or benefit me or preserve freedom for me, ever. They're the party that wants to confiscate rights. That's all they do. That's their MO. That's literally what their platform is. It should just say, we confiscate rights. That's it. Simply put, Americans, and they want, and this kind of goes off of that story I just told you. Americans want government to take care of them. Daily Caller piece written by Stephen Hall, but this is a poll straight from Axios. So who knows actually how legit or how, you know, reliable it is, but I think it is kind of worth just listening to. It was conducted June 11th to June 15th using a sample of 2,309, so 2,309 adults with a margin of plus or minus 3-point error, okay? So this poll, it shows that 66% of respondents say the government should work to lower the level of income distributed unevenly, up 4% compared to 2019. So they're saying 66% of the people that responded to this poll say that the government should confiscate wealth and then they should just redistribute it to make sure everything is equal, which essentially, folks, is communism. I mean, there's no other way to explain it. Republicans surveyed who agreed the government should tackle income inequality increased by 5%, and independents who responded similarly increased by 2%. According to the poll, Democrats saw an increase of 7% in favor of such policies. So the views among young Republicans, and this is really the problem, the views among young Republicans 18 to 34 have shifted dramatically, with only 40% of them saying the government should pursue such policies compared to an increase to 56%. So you're telling me a majority of young Republicans, and this is why, once again, this is why I don't identify with the party. This is why I say I'm way further right than the party is. 56% of them agree with redistributionist policies from the government, which I don't necessarily know if this is a 100% true poll. Because I don't know any Republicans that agree with this idea, but if this is totally screwed. Maybe the way in which they worded it is much more different than what I'm interpreting here and what I'm reading on paper. So next, 81% of Republicans aged 18 to 34 had a positive view of capitalism when polled in 2019. Now, that compares to 66% now in 2021. Among Gen Z results aged 18, or Gen Z adults aged 18 to 24, only 42% of them have a positive view of capitalism, and 54% have a negative view. So actually, more people hate the idea of capitalism. I'd much rather call it free markets. Capitalism kind of has this trope to it. It's kind of like a connotation, because the left is assigned to it some sort of malintent with the idea of trying to attain more capital and do better for yourself and be successful and build up your wealth so you can retire and you can pass that on to your children. So 58% of Americans aged 18 to 34 have favorable views of capitalism in 2019. That declined to 49%. It's just that the perception of socialism are still nationally negative, but they're saying 41% of Americans in the Axios poll say they have a favorable view, and 52%. So we almost have, though, you know, a 50-50 with the view of socialism on this poll, which is just very troubling. But we have Ron DeSantis on the case. He actually came out with some legislation saying that some of these kids in student government in Florida, they're going to be taught anti-communism training. But first, I just want to play a quick clip from Joe Scarborough on MSNBC. It seems like he's totally displaced, and the rest of his news anchors around him as well are displaced from actual news. Play clip 5.
But my God, you should have seen the response for Ron DeSantis. He was like a conquering king. And this person who's been in Republican politics for 40, 45 years said, I haven't seen anything since Reagan in 80. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable.
Ron DeSantis.
Ron DeSantis. And I keep hearing this.
I have too.
Just Rockstar says this guy is taking over the Republican Party.
And Ron DeSantis.
Ron DeSantis. And I saw something. I saw a poll yesterday,
okay.
Mika.
So Mika Brzezinski, these people really, it's like they're so displaced from society. They haven't realized how good of a job Ron DeSantis has done over these last couple of years, because all they've done is they vilified him, especially in COVID, because he took the least restrictive orders on the people. He let them live freely, a.k.a., and they don't like that idea. So Mika Brzezinski, if you didn't see it, she's on video on Rumble. She looks down and she writes down the name Ron DeSantis. Like, you people, all you do is report on the news. You don't even know who Ron DeSantis is. You need to look down and write his name. And then she kept repeating his name in the background. Ron DeSantis? Ron DeSantis. Oh, that's interesting. Like, you guys are so displaced, and your job is strictly to cover the news, especially politically, and you don't even know the names of the politicians. It is astonishing to me. So what I have is DeSantis, and this is him talking about the anti-communism teachings for student government in his state. Play clip 2.
One can really provide a guide to how that should be done. The bill also expands our previous efforts in civics to add a requirement for the high school government class that students receive instruction on the evils of communism and totalitarian ideologies. We have a number of people in Florida, particularly Southern Florida, who've escaped totalitarian regimes, who've escaped communist dictatorships, to be able to come to America. We want all students to understand the difference. Why would somebody flee across shark-infested water, say, leaving from Cuba to come to Southern Florida? Why would somebody leave a place like Vietnam? Why would people leave these countries and risk their life to be able to come here? It's important that students understand that. Now, as part of this bill, Florida will create a Portraits and Patriotism Library so students can learn about real patriots who came to this country after seeing the horrors of these communist regimes.
Yeah, so that's that is Ron DeSantis. They're passing some legislation, student governing bodies. They're going to be teaching them about patriotism, and they are going to be teaching them about the negatives of communism. Communism has been known to kill millions of people. I think Stalin killed something like 100 million people. It's actually even more than Hitler killed. Then I also have this. And like I said, we're winning in this war right now. So we're attacking communism head on. We have this transgender policy that they're attacking right now. They're fighting in Loudoun, Virginia. And this is the same place that where people were arrested in the school board meeting for going against critical race theory as well. So check this clip out.
What does allowing transgender people going into a place where they feel safe and they feel welcome, how does that affect somebody else?
There's no compassion in a rushed policy that confuses young children. And they're ignoring the fact that many children actually work through those feelings of confusion with gender dysphoria, even without counseling.
And how do the students feel about this? One freshman student tells us she feels the school has pushed ideas on her that strip her from her innocence. For example, she told us she was involved in a play with sexual scenes.
It was for a rehearsal, and the scene was a bunch of four people, and they were all minors, playing out like they were going to go after the scene is ended and have group sex. It was written in the show. Yes. And that was something that I never wanted to happen and never to see, and I felt very, very unsafe.
Her mom and other parents say they're concerned about parents not having a solid voice in their child's education.
My daughter was cast in this play that was wildly inappropriate, and it was nobody consented me, you know, is this appropriate for your 15-year-old minor daughter?
And so we have these parents, they're fighting pretty vehemently against these school boards, and this is showing that the schools really, for years, they've been operating with a hands-off approach from the parents, and the parents are kind of waking up and recognizing now what's been going on in their school programs for so long and how it has produced these kind of these indoctrinated children. It's a very weird event. Chris Rufo. So Chris Rufo kind of went on with Mark Lamont Hill a little bit, talked about critical race theory. Now he goes on with Joy Reid. They had this giant sparring match on Twitter. They went back and forth. And then in this clip, it was about 10 minutes long. I cut it down. I shortened it. She talks over him the entire time. And he actually does a very good job of defending his position. Her position pretty much is just like, you guys are racist and what you're saying is a lie. And then he goes through what critical race theory extols, what it's based off of, the ideology it's based off of. And she just keeps continuing to cut him off and saying it's her show. Which I don't know what that even is supposed to, like, hey, it's my show isn't really an argument. Like, no one cares that it's your show, but I'm going to play this clip for you. It's a little long, but I think it's worth your time. Play clip three.
I'm a white guy fighting critical race theory.
Do you identify as white?
I'm an Italian American. So you tell me,
lumping people into white, black, Asian, as you suggested, is such a crude and broad categorization.
There's these, like, very kind of pathetic and very, you know, angry graduate students that you know, try to fight me on these highly technical, Hegel interpretations. And it's like, I don't have time for this. I don't give a about this stuff.
So you don't give an S about this stuff. You're really just having a campaign to take everything that annoys white Americans and white conservatives.
No, that's not right.
You want to make a campaign and stuff everything in there.
You played my highlight reel. Give me a chance to respond.
And you want to stuff it all into critical race theory, right?
What I don't think is right is that forcing 8-year-olds in Cupertino, California to deconstruct their racial identities and then rank themselves according to power and privilege. It's intersectionality theory, which was invented by Kimberly Crenshaw.
That's intersectionality. It's a separate thing. Intersectionality
is a
separate
race
thing. No, it's not, dear.
You had her on your show. You know
she's
this.
She invented both things.
And here's the bottom
things.
Line, Joy.
She invented both things.
What you've done in tonight's segment is exactly what I'm fighting against. I'm fighting against the manipulation of language. I'm fighting against
you're,
language
you're fighting against wokeness, and you don't like corporate wokeness,
et cetera. I get it. I get it. All of these euphemistic terms with subversive content. Because otherwise, you just say whatever you want, and then you back away from it, and you dance around it. It's not going to happen. Parents all over this country, they know what's happening in their public institutions, and you're seeing people revolt against this divisive identity politics, and you can dance all you want, but you're not going to stop people from understanding what's happening
in
their classrooms.
I actually appreciate that you said that, because Christopher, what you basically, and you admit it yourself, that you've taken all of these sort of wokeness moments, corporate wokeness, corporate sort of woke money, woke capital, the things that annoy conservatives, and you've stuffed it all into the name.
This is just intellectual dishonesty. This is bringing someone on a show and going with the gotcha moment. So they played a quick reel of him. They ended with it where he said, I don't give a shit. And then she won't even say the word because, you know, she's on national television as if she never says that word with her friends around. She's easily one of the dumbest. There's so many to choose from. because you got Brian Stelter, you got Chuck Todd, and then, I mean, Wolf Blitzer is legitimately actually stupid. He doesn't seem as stupid on TV, but Joy Reid is another one that she's just an imbecile. And there's really nothing. Do you hear what Chris Rufo at one point says? Yeah, well, the same woman that created critical race theory, it's derived, or intersectionality theory, it's derived from critical race theory. The same woman developed it. And she said, well, no. And he said, you had this woman on your show. And then she goes, no. Those are two separate things that she created. Those are two completely separate things. Like, come on. I mean, how far are we just going to expand the lie at this point? How far are we going to go down the trail of lies? And she says, well, you're going against this, you're going against this, you're going against that, and you're just, you know, bundling it up and manipulating Republicans, because Republicans are so stupid, and they always listen to everybody else, because they're idiots. I mean, it's just, it really is. It's like they just detest you so much. They just detest the right-wing ideology so much on these shows. And what they hope for, and what Joy Reid, I had a clip of her talking about, I remember I was never able to get to it, but she was talking about how Antifa like wasn't a real thing at one point, and then they actually cut it off on the highlight reel at MSNBC online, and somebody must have recorded it on their TV as it was happening live. Like, they don't want to show this woman, because she goes out there and she just says garbage. Like, these people think about how much they get paid. They get paid millions of dollars to push lies on national television for the Democrat Party. So I have this next article, just a quick story. U.S. launches drone strikes on Afghanistan ahead of meeting with Afghanistanian president. This is a Fox News piece. Lucas Tomlinson is the writer. The U.S. military has launched two drone strikes against Taliban positions in northern Afghanistan, a U.S. defense official told Fox News on Friday. The strikes came before Afghan President Ashraf Ghani is set to meet President Biden at the White House Friday afternoon. An unknown number of Taliban fighters were killed in Baghlan and Kunduz provinces where the strikes took place. So right now they're still fighting for land. I mean, this was going on during the Obama administration when a lot of the land in Iraq was taken back by ISIS. They took back Ramadi, and then they had a fight to get Ramadi back, which is one of the most deadly city in Iraq. So they have the same thing going on right now in this scenario in Afghanistan. Three more districts fell to the Taliban overnight, this article states. Meanwhile, the Afghanistanian military, they were able to take back six of the other districts elsewhere in the country in the past 24 hours. So they're still, at this point, they're still doing like the weird imperialism thing. They're fighting on these compounds. They're taking land back. Some of these U.S. officials, they think that Kabul could fall to the Taliban in a matter of months after American forces withdraw. The U.S. military is preparing to, you know, pull out 9/11. That's the deadline. And now they're also scrambling to evacuate some of these Afghan interpreters and their families before the complete military withdrawal. So I don't really know what's going to happen with this, folks. I don't know if they're going to try to ramp this back up, the whole military-industrial complex. I think at this point it's actually painfully obvious, the military-industrial complex. So I think for that reason alone, you might see an actual curtailment of the war there. I'm not 100% sure. We could see another Obama-era deal where he kept saying he was going to pull the troops out, and then he somehow is sending more and more troops there. But then the media has his back, and he keeps coming out and using the rhetoric that he's going to pull them out, and then just continues to send more guys over to Afghanistan. That might be the case in this one, but I'm not exactly sure. So what we got next? U.S. government UFO report. I think this one's very, it's very telling. It's very interesting. Let's see if I have the actual data here. This is an Axios piece. They talk about how the government, and it's written by Jacob Knudsen and Gigi Sukin, okay? So they talk about specifically, and I could have swore I put this in here, but now I'm just throwing it on the page. Okay, so the U.S. government on Friday released a landmark report mandated by Congress examining unidentified aerial phenomena, also known as like UFOs, witnessed by U.S. military personnel over recent years. Now, this report found no evidence of aliens. It did find that these UFOs, or these, as they're calling it, unidentified aerial phenomena, because I guess they can't explain it. They can't specifically call it UFOs because no one saw it in plain sight. They saw it over the radar, moving at extremely fast rates. Could pose a threat to national security. The report issued by the intelligence community and Department of Defense did not definitively determine what the military personnel saw. The report examined more than 140 incidents over the past two decades, but offered very few exceptions for the observed phenomena. The limited amount of high-quality reporting on unidentified aerial phenomena hampers our ability to draw firm conclusions about the nature or intent of these UAPs, as they call them. It did, however, determine that the identified aerial phenomena were not the result of advanced U.S. government technology. So I guess they're saying the U.S. government, I mean, that's all classified information. Maybe they wouldn't release it even if they had it, but apparently they're saying that they don't have it. Here's the few possible explanations, and I think this is the most interesting part of the piece, and I'll tell you what I actually think it is of these. So this is the possible explanations. They're saying the first is a man-made object littering the air, such as balloons or plastic bags. I find that one highly unlikely because I don't think the amount of speed was something that really breaks the law of physics, how fast things were going and then how fast some of these things were stopping as well. Here's another one. Ice crystals, moisture or heat inconsistencies may also appear to be flying objects to cameras and sensors. Yeah, I guess that's a possibility. Here's the one that I think is the most likely here. The objects could have been designed by a foreign adversary. Per the report, China and Russia are making strides in hypersonic technology and directed energy, areas of increasing focus at the Pentagon. The Washington Post notes. So what I actually think it is, I don't think it's that specifically. I think it could be that. But I think it's most likely this very last thing that the Pentagon is saying, or the report is saying. And this comes straight from the report, and I quote, "In a limited number of incidents, UAP reportedly appeared to exhibit unusual flight characteristics. These observations could be the result of sensor errors, spoofing, or observer misperception and require additional rigorous analysis." So I think it's spoofing, what they would call it. I think there's actually some sort of a device that maybe our adversaries are working on to pretty much throw off what our sensors are, whatever the depth perception of our sensors. Maybe it's some sort of a hack. Maybe it's something that it just throws off the sensor, almost like a scrambler to a UAV, I guess is the best way that I could try to characterize it, just because I don't have that battlefield knowledge. I think that might be it. I mean, I guess there's a chance of that hypersonic technology. I think it would much more come from us than it would come from those two countries. Maybe it's some sort of, top secret clearance that you would need to describe it. And they just don't want to come out and tell our adversaries that we have that type of technology. Okay, so I'm going to get to the quick headlines. Just a couple quick videos I got first. I have to play this one. I thought it was hilarious. It's Brian Stelter. He goes on, I think he's on C-SPAN, and we have callers call in to talk to him as well as the host of the show, and they just rip him apart, the callers. Play four.
So I'd like to ask Brian to, on national television, admit he and his network are a bunch of liars about Donald Trump.
This is Kevin in Princeton, Indiana. Good morning.
Yeah, Mr. Stelter is the biggest minister of misinformation I have ever heard, and I'm a news junkie. He made the statement just a few minutes ago that he is, all the stories are always evolving. Yeah, stories absolutely evolve.
Brian Stelter.
Thank you for the feedback. I appreciate it.
Savannah, Georgia. Rick, good morning. You're next.
Yes, I was just wondering if you still feel like Michael Avenatti is the greatest thing in the world and should run for president of the United States.
That's
funny. My suggestion is whatever CNN says, do the opposite and you'll be fine.
Aurora, Indiana, this is Robert. Good morning. You're on with Brian Stelter.
You know, CNN is just something that's a joke. It's a joke. Right. This guy tells more lies, and Fox gives more news than CNN does in
What lie did I tell?
2 years. It's nothing
but
lies.
Just to kind of go over some of the Stelter lies, COVID, he's been wrong. He stood by Fauci. He's gone against, whatever Trump said, pretty much he went against the entire time. Azithromycin, hydroxychloroquine. he was wrong about that. He was wrong about Russian collusion hoax. And then he was also wrong, as that guy was mentioning, Michael Avenatti. I mean, he's been wrong multiple times. Pretty much any media hoax that has gone on, the Hunter Biden stuff as well, that's another thing that he was saying. Oh, these are unsubstantiated. These are things coming out of Russia. That's another thing he said. It's just not true. He's a liar. It's almost to the point where when you lie all the time and then you say, what is that I lied about? When you ask somebody that, it's kind of actually hard because you're just like, you say that's the response usually is, yeah, specifically, you don't think specifics. You just think, oh, well, pretty much everything, because that's you've been lying this entire time. Next one I got is I have Kamala Harris finally goes down to the border, and I'm going to give you some really hilarious information about her actually going down the border if she was really on the border, which she was not. Play clip one.
Our administration, it is important to be clear, is working to build a fair and a functional and a humane immigration system. We feel very strongly about that. And as you know, we inherited a tough situation. In fact, right here in El Paso was the launch of the child separation policy. You saw it as it rolled out on the ground in real time. We have looked at a system where people have been housed in inhumane conditions over the last many years. An asylum system that has been broken and that needs to be reconstructed. And in 5 months, we've made progress, but there's still much more work to be done. But we've made progress.
This is blaming on the past administration while you haven't been there for the last 5 months. But what I think the most important part is, I have the itinerary from the office of the vice president. So this is a government document that came out. I guess it's like a presser, really. It's like a press release. This is the daily guidance for that exact day. She went down. She traveled there 6 a.m. Eastern time. She traveled down to El Paso, okay? She got to the International Airport of El Paso at 8:35 mid-Eastern time, I guess you would call it. I'm not even sure of the time zones because I live in the Eastern time. She went to the El Paso Border Patrol Station. She did a tour, okay, which is nowhere near, by the way. That's not near the border. It's actually where she went, where the real crisis is going on. She's 800 miles away from it right now in El Paso. So this isn't actually where they're having the biggest illegal alien problem right now. So then she went to meet with advocates from a faith-based NGO and shelter and legal service providers. And then she went back. The meeting happened in the El Paso International Airport. Then she delivered the remarks, which you just saw there, to a travel pool coverage of remarks at the El Paso International Airport. And then at 12:30 p.m., so she was really, wow, you're kidding me. She departs and heads back to Los Angeles. So she was there for a total of like 3 hours, really. Four hours she was there. That's amazing. And then she goes back to LA. Like, you couldn't even spend the day there, lady. Like, I mean, that's unbelievable. I can't even believe that. She spent like 3.5 hours and it's not even at the border. She went to the facility, and actually I could tell you how long she was at the facility for. So she spent less than 2 hours at the actual Border Patrol station, and then she went back to El Paso International Airport, which must be right next to that Border Patrol station, and then kind of had like an hour-long meeting and then went home. I mean, it's pathetic. This is pathetic. Our government is pathetic. There are people that don't even put a good day of work in. You can't even say, well, at least they were there. I mean, you can't even do that. At least everyone works with that one person where you can be like, yeah, you know, they suck, right? But you can count on them showing up to work and just kind of being there and working at like a minimal, mediocre pace. You can't even say about that about our government right now. You can just say, well, I mean, they were there for 3 hours, I guess. I mean, it's pathetic that that's a day of work in the eyes of the vice president, something she's been holding off for almost she hasn't been in the border, I think. It's something like 100 days. It's unbelievable. And then she blames it on the former president because he didn't like the idea of illegal immigration coming into the country. Now they're trying to figure out a way to revamp the situation. This has been one of the biggest failings of the Biden administration, the crisis at the border that they do not even want to address. They don't even want to talk about it. And the media will make her look like the grand wizard after everything is said and done after this meeting that she had. So, once again, I have these quick headlines. I got John McAfee. He's found dead in his jail cell after extradition to the U.S. has been approved. I think he was in a Spanish prison system. Dude was like 70 years old. He's known for writing McAfee, the software. I don't think he owned the company. He didn't really have much to do with it after that, over the last like 20 years. Apparently he had some information on the Clintons. So, you know, he got suicided while he was in jail. And then he also said, I think he actually got a tattoo saying that he wouldn't. He told everybody, he tweeted that he wouldn't kill himself. And then here we are. He might have... Here, I'm going to give you the devil's advocate position. Maybe he did it because he realized he was going to go back to the United States and they would have probably thrown him in prison for the rest of his life because he had some sort of dirt on the Clintons. So I guess, you know, Clinton had something to do with it one way or the other, I guess, if you can put it that way. So Britney Spears, conservatorship. This story is interesting. This is a Foundation of Economic Education. Hannah Cox writes it. Britney Spears, for the last, like, it was since 2007, so for the last, what, almost 15 years, she's had this idea, this conservatorship, where her two parents pretty much own everything, and she has to log everything she writes, how much money she makes. If she wants to get into a relationship with somebody, she has to go to her parents for their approval. This is a weird government process that they have that needs to be abolished, where they give, like, the sole rights of being to somebody that they can trust in the family because this person had some sort of drug addiction in the past. And yeah, okay, sounds like a good idea, but I mean, does it sound like a good idea? How long are you gonna do this for years like this? I mean, she's been doing this for 15 years. I think at this point she's in her 40s, right? I'd imagine. And she can't do anything. She has a net worth. She's increased her net worth over these years. $60 million, and it's like she hasn't been able to spend all the money, and her parents have been running it the entire time. I mean, her situation is just terrible. She can't even talk about marriage. She can't talk about getting into relationships because it's like her parents have a saying in everything that she does, according to this article. It's insane to me. I don't even know how these are rules. I mean, if you're going to do something like this, mate, you do it to a kid. You don't do it to an adult. You need to have some sort of basic sovereignty. And if she was in that type of situation where it was so bad, you go to a clinic, you get help, and then that's it. But after that, you have to live like a free citizen and live like an adult. I mean, it's crazy. Supreme Court sides with a high school cheerleader. This was a very interesting piece. It was a CNN piece. Clarence Thomas was the dissenting opinion. This high schooler, this young girl, she went on, I think she was like 14 at the time. And she said something like, F cheerleading, F school, F this. And then she got in trouble for it when she went into school. And the Supreme Court held you really can't hold somebody accountable for something, especially like that, something outside of school when they go to the school. Which does make sense, actually. Because if you think about what the public, this is a public school system, so the government tax dollars pay for this. So you're having like the government pretty much do what the parent is supposed to do and punish the child for something that isn't, we're not talking about, you know, assault. We're talking about just words that aren't pointed towards anybody, that's not threatening anybody. Her just saying, like, screw school, I'm done. I'm done with it. I don't want to deal with it. Everybody has that when they're a kid. Everybody understands that, especially in your teens. That was the scenario. She put it up, and surprisingly, Clarence Thomas was against it. And it just doesn't make, and it was like, there's a perception that you need to hold when you're a cheerleader on the high school team and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. But at the same time, we're going to have the school, because I've had this actually not happen to me personally, but people in my family this has happened to, where the school now gets involved with what these kids are doing in their private lives. And it's a problem because it's none of the school's decision to make whether or not to enforce stupid horseshit arbitrary rules to these kids. So Trump, I have this piece from BizPak Review. Trump talks about election audits a little bit. It's very interesting to see what's going to go on with these audits. I've heard a lot of reports. It's kind of hard to follow because judges are kind of getting in the way of recounts in Georgia and Arizona. But we're going to see what ends up happening with that. But I wanted to end with this one. Chauvin's been sentenced to 22.5 years, so 22 and a half years. And I thought this part was very, very fascinating, is the video before he goes to leave, and he just gives his condolences to the family. Play clip 3.
Thank you, Your Honor. At this time, due to some additional legal matters at hand, I'm not able to give a full formal statement at this time. But very briefly, though, I do want to give my condolences to the Floyd family. There's going to be some other information in the future that would be of interest, and I hope things will give you some peace of mind. Thank you.
And I'll note that I did read your comments in the pre-sentence investigation as well.
Thanks, Fred.
What I take from this video is he's going to appeal. Obviously, that's why he doesn't want to make an official statement. He gives condolences to the family. But then near the very end where he mentions, you know, something will come out and then it'll make you guys kind of feel like at peace or something. It'll help you kind of piece this whole thing together. I thought that part was really interesting. I'm surprised that no one is covering this, because I just don't know exactly what it is that he's referring to. But he's definitely going to appeal the case, and he's making it like that's why he's not going to make an official statement, because he doesn't want that to be used to kind of used against him in his appeal. I just thought that was a very interesting snippet there. But yeah, I greatly appreciate everyone for tuning in as always. Have a great weekend. All the good stuff. Federalist Paper on Monday, Federalist Paper on Friday. Then we'll have current events as well. These next couple weeks, I'm going to be going on vacation at some point. I think I'm going to still do the current event episodes, but I'm going to hold off on Federalist Papers. But I will let everybody know on that. So everybody enjoy their weekend. Have a great one. And I will see you all on Monday. Thank you.